It's reported that there are 9,488 churches and other Christian buildings that have been attacked. 3,711 believers have been detained without a trial. They have been arrested or sentenced or imprisoned. And 2,983 people have been killed in the world for their Christian faith. That information's an eye-opener. To learn that every day there are believers with families, with loved ones just like us, that are paying the ultimate price for their faith. Here in the United States, when we talk about persecution, for the most part, our ideal is people maybe calling us names, or maybe our city hall refusing to let us put up crosses or some kind of religious symbol in the park, or our ability to hand out Bibles and teach it in our public schools. But what do you think would happen to the churches in America if one day we woke up and it was illegal to be a Christian, as it is in many places in the world? How would you be able to keep your faith under those circumstances? You know, in one sense, there's no way to know what we would do until something like that were to happen, and we don't want to find out what that would be like. But the question this morning that we want to address is there anything a person can do today to prepare in the event that something like that might happen here where we live? None of us want to test our faith under such circumstances. We've all read the scriptures and looked at history and even seen movies about all of it. That in the early days in Christianity, enemies of Christ were told to stop their testimony of their faith, and if they didn't do that, if they didn't compromise what they believed, they would call for the lions. Christian men, women, children, put into arenas with hungry lions because they refused to recant their faith. Much in the same way, this morning we're going to be looking at a story in the 6th chapter of the book of Daniel. It's the last in our series that we want to present from this book at this time. But this is exactly what happened. Daniel refused to violate the basic tenets of his faith, and they called for the lions. What will you do when they call for the lions, if they ever do in your life? But what we learn from Daniel might help us to prepare for that event should it happen in America. Little more plainly put, what can we do to prepare in the event that the ultimate sacrifice of our life was called for? Let me set the stage, because it may not be what you think. Our story this morning in the 6th chapter of Daniel finds Daniel about 80 years old, they say. Don't envision the young boy that we have talked about in earlier chapters. We're talking about an older man. And secondly, you need to consider that the lion's den in that day was the equivalent of the capital punishment by all kinds of powers. The Medes and the Persians chose to use lions. Just as in previous chapters, the furnace was the occasion. And if we go to the Roman time, crucifixion was done by the cross as Jesus was hung on one. It was a certain violent means of death if you were cast into the den of lions. So with that as the backdrop, let's turn over to Daniel chapter 6. Begin with me, if you would, beginning in verse 1. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom. and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them so that the king would suffer no loss. Apparently, Darius, who we read about, who gained control of this territory, must have selected from the cabinet, so to speak, of Belshazzar, the king before that he had conquered, to pull men like Daniel in order to control the populace and to support his treasury. Let's pick it up in verse 3. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because of an excellent spirit within him. And the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. So the governors and the satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault found in him. Summary. Jealousy among those who were governing like Daniel was governing. He was appointed over them and potentially could rule over the whole thing because of his abilities and his honor, and they didn't like it. It's jealousy. Sounds a lot like modern day politics, doesn't it? You're in power, so I want you out at all costs. But they could find nothing immoral. They could find nothing wrong in the way in which he governed. There was nothing shady in his public service. So they decided to frame him in the one thing that they thought they could catch him and that he would be vulnerable, and that is his faith. Let's pick it up in verse 5. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." So these governors and satraps thrown before the king and said thus to him, "King Darius, live forever." All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors and advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god for or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. Therefore, King Darius, sign the written decree. He fell for their scheme. Not all the governors, not all the satraps had agreed to that. Pick it up in verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. And in his upper room, with his windows open towards Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. And they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. "Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions?" The king answered and said, "The thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter." So they answered and said before the king that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show due respect for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself. And he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored until the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed." Instantly, the king realized his mistake. He'd been duped by these guys. I can visualize him calling in all the lawyers and spending all the rest of the day and the evening trying to find a way out But the law is the law, and apparently their law could not be changed. Let's continue beginning in verse 16. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signets of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No magicians were brought in before him, and also his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning, and he went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Then Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you." Then the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he believed in his God. Daniel's safe. Can you imagine the look on those that had trapped him, put him into the lion's den, so to speak? King turns to those guys who had framed him. Look at verse 24. And the king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. Wow. Those lions were hungry. They hadn't eaten all night. Sure hadn't eaten Daniel. Let's finish the story beginning in verse 25. Then King Darius wrote to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, "Peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is one which shall not be, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Okay. We've seen what Daniel did when they called for the lions. But let's look closer and see if he can teach us what we ought to do if they ever call for the lions under similar circumstances. First thing I might say, and what we see from Daniel, is just keep on being what you've been. You know, as we read through this chapter, as we read through the first five chapters of Daniel, if there's anything to be said about Daniel's life, it's his consistency. This chapter says he was one who distinguished himself, not only in his affairs of the government of the people, but he distinguished himself in his honor and his faith. Daniel wasn't a slacker. He worked hard in the courts. He'd worked for two kings that we read about already. And now he's doing the same for the third. Verse 4 tells us that his opponents could find no fault, no charge in him. Can you imagine what they would do? You imagine, you see what they do today. I mean, they're looking into trash cans. They're eavesdropping through the windows. They're checking with the friends. They're digging in everything that they could possibly dig into in order to find something in order to entrap him. They hid in the bushes. They probably watched him when he went home. They could probably tell him what his dreams are if he snored and he talked in his sleep. But they could find no hidden dirt. The next phrase says, he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. Daniel didn't wait till he was under the surveillance by those who sought to trap him in order to do the right thing or live the moral life. He was free from corruption at this time because he had been free from corruption all through his life. He's always been faithful, always been true, always been a hard worker. When they called for the lions, he merely had to continue doing what he had always been doing. Sometimes you watch football, you hear these interviews that take place between the players and the reporter. You know, what are you going to do today? How are you going to handle this biggest game of your career? And sometimes they just look back at the reporter, interviewer, and they say, well, we practiced this all week long and we're going to do what we practiced. In other words, we don't have any surprises. We're just going to keep being as good as we've always been. We're just going to keep working like we've always worked. You're not going to wait till the day of the race in order to practice and get ready and train for the race. You're not going to wait till the day of the football game to learn how to throw a football or how to tackle a person. You're going to do what you've always done. A 12-year-old boy who was called one day to be a witness in a very important lawsuit. One of the lawyers questioned this little 12-year-old boy, and he said, your daddy's been coaching you, telling you how to testify, hasn't he? The little boy was kind of scared. He says, yes. Oh, the lawyer knew he had him. Tell me and the court exactly what your father has told you concerning how you ought to testify. He said, well, Dad told me that you lawyers would try to tangle me up in what I said. But if I could just be careful and tell the truth, I would always say the same thing every time. Three cheers for a daddy somewhere in this boy's life. He told him the right thing. What do you do when they call for the lions? Don't change a thing. Keep on being what you have always been. And if you have been faithful to your faith, you will continue to be faithful to your faith. Second thought this morning. Keep on doing what you've always done. Go back to verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he knew the writing was signed, he went home. And in his upper room, with his windows open towards Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. Prayer and thanksgiving, nothing new to Daniel. He had been doing that all along. We saw that in the first chapter, the second chapter. The window was always open. And in that day, that Jew always prayed facing Jerusalem. Three times a day was his habit, according to what we just read. And this day was no different. He heard the edict, the decree. He didn't panic. He didn't run upstairs. He didn't go and hide. He didn't get out a crowbar and pry the window open that had been painted shut years before. The window was always open because it was his custom. Three times a day. To pray and give thanks to his father. What do you do when they call for the lions? Keep doing what you've always been doing, if it's right. There was a retired couple who cashed in everything that they had, and they went and bought an RV, and they decided they were going to tour the country. And at this particular time, they were testing it out, and it had in that day something that was unusual in an RV, and that was a cruise control. And they were heading up the highways in California. Well, the husband got tired. He went back in the RV, and he let his wife drive. He was taking a nap. And so she was just driving, and in that particular highway, it was long and it was straight, and it was tiring, and it was boring, and so she put it on cruise control and thought it was real cool. It just seemed to run. And finally, after an hour or so, she decided that it was doing okay, so she just got up and decided to go back herself and take a little nap. Well, she discovered that cruise control is not automatic pilot. The RV did crash, neither were hurt. She explained it to the California Highway Patrol. We need to remember to continue to be on cruise control. Keep doing steadily what we've always done. But we need to also remember that cruise control is not automatic pilot. We do need to pay attention to our lives. You don't make a trip by making long heaps. You just take it a mile at a time. Preparation for the big trials in life doesn't happen at the last moment. It happens because you have handled all the little trials along the way of life. Keep on doing what you've always done, and you'll be okay. They call for the lions. Third thought, keep on trusting who you've always trusted. Look down at verse 16. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. Even the king knew of the faith of Daniel. This is not Nebuchadnezzar. This is not Belshazzar. This is an entirely different king, one who had conquered. But the life of Daniel had reflected that he always trusted in his God. Let's pick it up in verse 22. Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God has sent his angels and shut the lions' mouths so that they may not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And I also, king, have done no wrong before you. Then the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury was whatever was found on him, because he believed in his God. This level of trusting wasn't unique to this situation in the life of Daniel. Chapter 1, you remember the issue about the king's food? God was first. Chapter 2, you remember interpreting the dream? He was connected with his God. God worked through him. Chapter 4, he had the confidence to tell the king the truth. And last week, he turned down honor and prestige because he put God first. Whenever someone fails to trust a God in the clutch, it is probable because he has never or she has never trusted God before. Remember the army of Saul? He was standing there looking down on the valley, and before him was a giant called Goliath. And everyone in the children of Israel was afraid to go war against that great guy. Until little David stood up and he came forward and he volunteered to fight him. And it's found over in the book of 1 Samuel in chapter 17. Let's see what it says beginning in verse 36. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defiled the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. He could handle the biggest battle of his life at this moment because he had trusted in God in all the smaller battles. I'm not saying, you know, going before a bear or a lion was a little battle. But I'm saying that David trusted in the Lord. If you read church history, it's a gentleman whose name was Polycarp, P-O-L-Y-C-A-R-P. He was a first century disciple of the Apostle John. Back in the days in which Christians were cast into the den of lions, or some of the great catastrophe took place if they wouldn't renounce their faith, Polycarp was in that situation. He was to be executed. And they asked him if he had anything else to say. And this is what he said. 86 years I have served Christ, and he has done me nothing but good. How then could I curse him now, my Lord and Savior? They burned him alive. You want to be strong if they ever call for the lions in your life? How are you doing in trusting God in the little things? In Jeremiah chapter 12, verse 5, appropriate verse for what we're talking about, says this. If you have run with the footmen and they have wearied you, then how can you contend with horses? And if in the land of peace in which you trusted they wearied you, how then will you do in the floodplain of the Jordan? In other words, if you want to compete with the horses, then you need to train by running with the footmen. And if you want to be in the thickets of life when things are complicated, then maybe you ought to be dealing with God in the land of peace. Keep on trusting who you have always trusted, and you'll be okay. Final thought. Some time back, there was in the Nashville newspaper a story by a lady whose name was Mrs. Lila Craig. She was reported to not have missed a single service of going to church for 1,040 Sundays. Divide that. That's 20 years. Never missed a time in 20 years. She was in the 80s at the time of the article. This is what the editor wrote. I think it's interesting. It makes one wonder, what's the matter with Mrs. Craig? Doesn't she ever have unexpected company? How is it that she never goes anywhere on Saturday night, that she's so tired to attend Sunday morning service the next day? Doesn't she ever beg off to attend picnics or family reunions or have headaches or colds or nervous spells or tired feelings? Doesn't she ever oversleep and need time to read her Sunday newspaper? Hasn't she ever become angry at the minister or had her feelings hurt by someone and felt justified in staying home to hear a good sermon on the radio or TV? What's the matter with Mrs. Craig anyway? When they interviewed her, you know what? She didn't change anything. She was just doing what she had always done. What she had always been, doing what she's always done, trusting who she's always trusted in. When they call for the lions, what would you do? I suggest you take a lesson from Daniel this morning and just be what you've always been, doing what you've always done, trusting whom you've always trusted in. And if you don't have Lord in your life, this morning as we sing the song of invitation, there's an opportunity for you to answer him. He calls to you through faith, through repentance of sin, through confessing that you believe that Jesus is Christ. By being immersed, wash away those sins. And then to begin to build that faith so that should that ever come, and I pray it never does, we'll proudly walk with our hand in the Lord. Come if you will as we stand and sing.